kind of a little twangy this morning. It's 11:06 on WSIC News. You're listening to We're Just Saying with Senator Vicki Sawyer and David. I'd like to be part of our show, 844-STUDIO-4. We are streaming live on the WSIC News website, YouTube, Facebook, X, and LinkedIn. Good yes. morning, good Senator Sawyer.
Good morning. Good Friday.
Good Friday.
Yeah, it is Easter, and it's beautiful outside.
I know, right? Perfect perfect weather coming in for the Easter weekend.
Yeah, it is. Now, have you already gotten your Easter bunny basket together for yourself?
Those are being put together as we speak,
oh,
as a matter
nice.
Of fact, I believe, my understanding.
Your understanding. So my question is at what point as parents of young adults do we not make Easter baskets for our children?
I'm probably not the one to ask that uh-huh. because I've got a 21-year-old and she still gets one.
Yeah. Well, me too. I have a 21-year-old and 18, and they too are getting an Easter basket from the Easter Bunny. And it becomes increasingly more expensive, though, to fill those Easter baskets.
It's similar to Christmas. Like, because I remember when your kids were younger, like, and you'd come down and it's like, you know, setting Santa, when Santa Claus delivered yeah. his stuff and you had, you know, your presents for them and you look there and it's just like, wow, this is just obnoxious. How much is here? Right. Uh-huh. But then as they get older, the piles shrink, but the cost sort of remains the same yeah. or goes up and it's fewer things. And so finally, when you get down there and it's like, you're trying to look at it and it's like, yeah, do I need to get them more?
Yeah.
There's only like two things here.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but those two things cost $700.
I know. It's so expensive. Now, no, you have two young daughters, and so do I. And like, so I was looking for things for the Easter Bunny for their basket to see what they would like. I mean, and like shampoo and conditioner is almost like a treat now. It is like $60, $70 for like the stuff they want from all these TikTok influencers. I'm like, what happened to the day of just Suave? Like the old school?
Suave
like,
or Vidal Sassoon.
Oh, Rain, White Rain or, like, what happened to all those staples? But now it's like all like bougie and you have to have the perfect hair.
Yes.
Perfect makeup.
There's a perfect chemical makeup. You know, it's like, I can't have that one because my hair doesn't react well to it.
Yeah.
Like, okay, what does that even mean?
I don't know.
Does it fall out? Because if it doesn't fall out, your hair is fine. Okay, I mean, is it clean and does it smell nice? Why does it have to be all these chemicals and this special kind of brand?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
I really don't.
I don't either. But then you also are the man who's sitting here with a matching outfit. You have your...
What's wrong with matching?
It's nothing, but you definitely...
You match?
Well, I have on jeans and a white shirt. I think
that match?
And that match. Well, you have your UNCC gear on. Go Niners.
Go Niners.
And matching kicks to boot.
Yes.
Yes.
What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with that, but I just don't normally see men who match their shoes and their shirt that often.
Well, you know
with a unique color.
Well, you know, I mean, I like to put forth my best effort.
Okay.
And so, you know, if my shoes match my, I mean, when I wear a suit, my shoes match the color of my suit. I wear, you know, black shoes for certain color suits and then blue or a brown shoes.
Yeah, but
or
if you're wearing
shoes.
A green suit, you have green shoes.
Sure. Why not?
Okay. All right. I'm not hating you on your game. I'm just
you're
saying.
Yeah, I get it. You're also probably one of those that has a special shampoo because your hair doesn't react well to like pert. Or
yeah.
Like, just grab some pert
yeah.
or some Dove.
Okay.
Right?
Let me start. You know what?
You don't need the fancy stuff. You don't need the fancy stuff. What brand of shampoo do you use?
My hairdresser supplies it to me.
And you're going to criticize me about my shoes.
Yeah. Well, and I also get really mad if somebody uses my shampoo because it's so darn expensive.
My wife gets mad if I use her shampoo as well.
Yeah.
And there's like five of them.
Yeah.
It's like a different combination. It's almost like a mixture, I think, as it goes. And like, I'll run out of, you know, I'm, you know, as a guy, I do the 2-in-1 Axe body wash.
Oh.
And so, but I got criticized for that the other day because someone said, no, shampoo has to be separate. Like you can't, like shampoo can't be body wash and body wash can't be shampoo. And I'm like, I'm bald.
Yeah.
So it's like all the same thing. Right?
That's what I was going to say. Like, you don't really need to condition your hair, do you?
I really don't. It's not a necessity with me anymore, but I use that. But that, I will on many occasions run out and I fail to go to the store to get myself some or to notify my wife
sure.
that it is empty because the empty bottle will sit there for a few weeks. And then only when like it gets kicked over, she realizes it's empty and I get chastised. Sure. But then I'm like, it's out. So let me just use some of her shampoo. And I just wash and everything like that. And it's, I get strongly rebuked for that.
Cardinal sin.
Strongly rebuked. There's so many rules.
There's a lot of rules to sharing a shower with a woman.
Yes, there is.
There is. You guys get your one little area and that's it.
And
you shall not go anywhere
near. But I don't get my own razor. There's two razors in there of two separate colors, but yet both get used by her. I have to look at the blade. I'm like, wait a second. This did not look this way yesterday when I shaved. And now it does.
You're a shower shaver?
I am a shower shaver.
Really? How do you know where you mess up your beautifully coiffed goatee? I mean, how do you not mess it up?
I use the force. I just, I sense, I guide my way. But I mean, I have become such an expert on the contours of my face. Uh-huh. It's very easy to just go. And I just go by feel. But it's just easier because I get it done. I've always hated having to out of the shower to shave.
I will say the razor in the shower, I do get frustrated if it's used by someone else other than me. Because I've got a thing and I know where it's, I never thought that I'd be talking about my showering habits on a political show, but I do support the two razors.
We can throw things around.
Yeah, I know. I do support the two razors theory, and I am very territorial over my razor and my body wash and definitely my shampoo.
Yeah. Well, we don't know how the new North Carolina chair of the GOP feels about shaving or anything like that, but we do have a new one.
Yeah,
right?
We do.
As we
good
seamlessly segue into the first topic of the show, we have a new chair of the North Carolina GOP, and you were there.
I was there, yeah. So as many folks know, the current chair for the North Carolina GOP, the grand old party, has been called up to a higher service.
Yeah, he's going to the major leagues.
He's major leagues. You know, Michael Whatley, I've really been impressed with his service, especially as someone who came in and really picked and turned the party around. We were in a really bad spot financially and organizational-wise, and he helped lead the party and really delivered the state for Trump, several times. But he also has a really cool backstory. Mm-hmm. He was one of the attorneys in Florida. This is the old chair.
Old chair.
That's now the current
national GOP chair.
Yeah, national GOP chair. He was one of the attorneys in his young career who was in Florida during the hanging Chad phase.
Really?
He was in Miami-Dade, I think maybe a few other counties, literally looking over the election workers who, if you recall, if you're our age, when you see the ballot coming up and it was like, is that a dimple?
Yes.
Remember that?
Yeah, divining voter intent.
Yes. Yes.
I remember that.
And so he has had a complete history of election integrity law from the very beginning. He set up that in North Carolina. Other states are using his and the GOP's model to go across the United States. And because of his good work and service, he's got pulled up. But now, Jason Simmons, who had worked right beside him all along and understands and been on the front lines with that stuff, was chosen overwhelmingly to lead the Republican Party. There was a little bit of back and forth between a challenger named Jim Womack. I thought that the race was going to be a lot closer than it was because you just never know. Sometimes in our party, the loudest people get heard often, but you don't realize that they're not the majority of people. And so in this example, the loudest people actually were not the number of people to get it going. So Jason Simmons won overwhelmingly in a vote on Tuesday in Selma, North Carolina.
Important note, he was a Trump choice as well, so Trump we wish choice. Him the best of luck.
Yep.
You're listening to We're Just Saying on WSIC News. We'll be right back.
Stay with us. We'll have more of We're Just Saying with NC Senator Vicki Sawyer after this short break on 105.9, 100.7 WSIC. Now back to We're Just Saying with North Carolina Senator Vicki Sawyer on 105.9, 100.7 WSIC.
Welcome back to We're Just Saying on WSIC News with Senator Vicki Sawyer and David. If you'd like to be part of our show, 844-STUDIO-4. We are still streaming live on the WSIC News website, social media, YouTube, Facebook, X, and LinkedIn.
Yes.
So,
no more shower talk.
No more shower talk. shower talk.
We're done.
Yeah, that has done. To be a different show. No more shower talk. But I thought it was engaging radio. Yeah. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. I think the audience probably got a kick out of it.
Yeah, I know. They probably too are thinking about their razor situation. Well, at home.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you got to think about something.
Yeah. Well, maybe if you're listening to the show now, you can go on Etsy and get David a razor that's got his name in it. Coble.
What? You know what? Why you gotta be like that?
I'm just kidding.
But if someone chose to bless me with something like that, uh-huh. I would of course, you know, say right. Very much appreciate
yeah.
it. And that, but it still wouldn't do any good.
So
it still wouldn't do any good.
So some blessings that we were talking about. There was a committee hearing yesterday that something is right up your alley, and it was our guest host Larry Shaheen.
Yes,
and a few others. Well, tell us about what went on yesterday.
So he was down in Raleigh with some others, testifying in front of the Joint Committee on Economic Development.
Uh-huh.
That is co-chaired by Senator Dave Craven and our own WSIC News Radio partner, Representative Jason Sane. And the topic was affordable housing, and which has been a hot button around our area going on for a while now.
Sure.
Every town looking at how to there's task force set up for attainable housing. Workforce housing, affordable housing. There are tons of terms.
Okay. Can you tell me something? I know you need to make a point here, but this is something that blends together for me because words matter. What is affordable? What is attainable? And what is workforce?
So excellent question. I'm not entirely certain what all the differentiators are. I think affordable housing, generally, when you talk about affordable housing, that is, I think people view that a lot as similar to things like, government subsidized, Section A type things.
Okay.
Attainable housing is a term that a lot of people use synonymously with workforce housing, which is the people who work in your communities, like who are not paid an exponential amount. So like your service industries,
sure.
your teachers, your firefighters, your police and things like that. They work in your community, but can't afford to live in your community.
Okay.
So it's not the same thing. If you're looking at leveling up, mm-hmm. right. That attainable workforce, I believe, mm-hmm. is like the next level up.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they were holding the hearing on is what are the barriers to getting more affordable housing? Because, I mean, single family residential homes are, I mean, you are lucky to find a single family residential home. I mean, you can't find one really in Mooresville for under $400,000
really?
Right now, for example.
Wow.
There might be one-offs and things like
sure.
that, but even the smallest of new construction right now starts in 400s.
Wow.
Which, I mean, you're talking 1,500, 1,600 square feet.
Wow.
And so, and it's just because of the area and everything like that. So they were asking about, you know, what are the barriers? And one of the interesting things about it is the Home Builders Association actually did a study on this not that long ago. And for a single family residential home, 24% of the cost of the home is regulatory. And
okay.
So what that means is that basically all the and we're not just talking like, you know, a safety regulation,
right?
Making sure that you've got appropriate, you know, gas, electrical, water hookups and,
yeah.
you know, sturdy foundations, not that. That's a smaller, you know, portion.
Right.
But it is the additional regulatory burden that is held on top of that. For multifamily, 40% of
wow.
the cost
so
is in that regulatory burden.
So I try to do quick math. So on a house that's $400,000, this 24%, that'd be about $96,000.
Give or take, yeah.
That could be given... attributed to rules that the local cities put in place.
Correct.
That makes the homes more expensive.
Correct.
So my thought is that if the cities reduce some of these rules, that it would be affordable housing.
Yes, you would make housing much more affordable. So I'll give you a prime example.
Yeah.
Okay. Inside of a number of municipalities in our area and other areas, there is a requirement that homes must front face a public right of way.
Okay.
So what that means is public green space.
Right.
Or a public road.
Okay.
And so what that requires then is mostly the public open space is a little bit mitigated, but what it really means is you're building a lot more streets and orienting your development certain ways
okay.
because you have to front face that right of way.
Okay.
Now there's no safety factor to front facing a right of way. It has to do with connectivity. It has to do with aesthetics, walkability, all these nice, you know, buzzwords that you'll get from urban planners and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But from a practical standpoint if you're talking health and safety or mobility or that, it doesn't serve a real purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But what ends up happening is you lay concrete jungles all through a development in order to make sure that your that all of your homes front face a right of way.
Got it.
And so that increases the cost. That cost is not going to just be eaten by a developer. They're going to pass that along into the cost of the home or of the townhome, of the multifamily rent, whatever have you. Sure. That cost is always going to be passed on.
Sure.
And so there's other requirements like, you know, you got to build a greenway and you've got to connect here. And there's some local areas even go so far as to require development agreements where they can dictate architectural standards, even though that is expressly forbidden. And all this was talked about in the hearing yesterday. Mm-hmm. Even though that is expressly forbidden by state statute, they find ways around them on how you can park and where your garage can be and what type of garage. Things that you legally cannot dictate, but through developer agreement, through conditional zoning, you basically hamstring a developer into doing those things. And when pointed out that, hey, you guys can't technically ask this, many times the comment comes back, well, then you can sue us. Well, no developer wants to do that.
Right.
Because that's added cost, that's added time, that's bad will, because they want to build their development.
Sure.
So they eat these things. But again, they don't actually eat them. The person who comes to buy the house is actually eating them.
So it makes it more expensive for all.
Absolutely. And then you talk about density.
Right.
And so density is a dirty word from Huntersville through to Mooresville and even as far as many of these places.
So when you mean density, you mean putting more
the amount of houses
on 1 acre lot or whatever, however you say. Okay,
exactly.
Got it. Okay.
And so what you do by doing that, and you have a lot of pieces of land that are underutilized by density because they are cut down so much in order to make them palatable because people, you know, we can't, too much traffic, too, and you hear it all the time, too much traffic. Well, what that does is that, you know, supply and demand is a constant over the several hundred years now. You decrease supply and demand goes up.
Right.
That's just how it works. And if demand is up and supply is down, what happens? Costs go up.
Right.
So when you have communities that are saying, hey, we need more attainable housing, then you need to be approving more density.
Right.
Because you need more supply so that you can keep the costs at a point and you can keep the costs at a point to where people can actually afford to. Also decrease some regulatory burden so that the cost of those houses come down.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things that have to happen because as much as people love to come after developers and yell at them and evil developers and whatnot, they're not going to lose money for you.
Right.
No business. I don't care if you go to a gas station, if you go to a doctor, if you go to a fast food restaurant, no business should be asked to lose money in order to provide you a product.
Right.
That's just not the way it should work.
Right.
Developers are exactly the same way and they're not going to lose money. So they're just going to say, look, I'm going to take those costs on because I can build my development. And then cost is just going to be passed on to the consumer.
I love this approach. I love this approach because for so long when I've heard these conversations, I was sat down and said, well, the state needs to spend more money and give more money into a program that will underwrite these affordable housing or attainable housing things. And we just need to put more money towards building these things. And it's like, huzzah. How about just eliminate the reason why these things, that houses cost so much, and then let the free market work as it should be? It's such a refreshing approach to a problem that seems to be spanning North Carolina, especially in those fast growing areas.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
So, I know I love a sidewalk. I moved to a neighborhood that has sidewalks. I love the sidewalks. But is it necessary to have a sidewalk to build a home, right? I mean, that's a very expensive thing to do and to maintain, especially with all the ADA compliance and things like that. I mean, those are expensive things to have.
They absolutely
and then are. These roads, most of these roads and these private developments do not get turned over to the DOT. So the homeowners themselves are going to be responsible for maintaining and upkeeping of these roads. So if you're telling me that they are just making this like maintenance nightmare down the road for these folks. So they're paying more for things that they don't need. And then they're have to double pay again when they fail down the future in 20 years from now.
Yeah. And that's true in counties more than cities because majority of the time cities get their roads turned over.
Do they
to
really?
Them. They
okay.
do. But it's still the city has the costs for the city to maintain these roads goes up.
Right.
And so you're giving more roads, internal road networks that have to be maintained. That's more asphalt that you have to maintain, more paving that you have to do. And that which is expensive. And, you know, a lot of cities leverage what PAL bill funds that you're very familiar with. That's money that comes from the state specifically for paving. It's not enough. to cover the cost. And so as you're built, so you think about the layering of the cost, right? I have to build more streets in order to meet this regulatory requirement. So I build more streets. That's more cost to the homeowner that I have to turn over to them. Then I'm adding additional street network and additional yardage and miles of street to the city to turn over that they are now responsible for maintaining. Mm-hmm. And then that's an additional cost to them. And so all you're doing is layering cost upon cost upon cost. The regulatory burden doesn't just rest with the developer that then's passed on to the homeowner. It's also passed on to the city. And the city is then passed on what? To the taxpayer.
Sure.
And so you can argue that in a city, you're getting taxed twice because you're getting basically, it's costing you more to purchase the house because of a regulatory requirement by the city, which makes the assessed value of your house go up, which means your tax burden is up. And then, oh, by the way, the city has to maintain all these streets, which is an additional tax on you if they don't have the money to cover it. Because residential, for every, I think the it used to be for every for every 50 cents of tax revenue that you get from a residential single family home or townhome, city expends a dollar in cost to serve.
Oh gosh.
For every dollar you get in commercial or industrial, it's 50 cents to serve.
Okay.
So you make your bank on commercial and industrial, but commercial industrial doesn't come unless you have houses.
Right.
So it's all a cascading effect.
Yeah. That is really refreshing to hear. I really appreciate that you brought that up because, I mean, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, well, I didn't make any of that. I brought it up. I didn't make it up. But, but these are the kind of things they were talking about at the hearing because, again, the attainable housing, because you want the teachers and the firefighters and the policemen who work in your community and service your community to be able to be members of your community.
Right.
Right? Because, again, if they're not members of your community, they're staying 30 minutes away or whatever, and that's more traffic on your roads coming back in, and everybody hates traffic. Mm-hmm. So you want to decrease traffic, you make it easier to live in your community.
Right.
That's the way that should work.
I agree. I love it.
Well, get on that.
I'm going to get on it. I'm going to get on it right now.
Take that up during short session. Get this fixed.
Maybe not on Good Friday, but yeah, I'll do it.
All right. Well, you just can't get good service these days. You're listening to We're Just Saying on WSIC News Radio. We'll be right back.
There's more We're Just Saying with North Carolina Senator Vicki Sawyer on the way from 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
Joan Doniger, Bloomberg Radio.
Call now to speak with NC Senator Vicki Sawyer at 844-STUDIO-4. It's We're Just Saying on 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
Welcome back to We're Just Saying with Senator Vicki Sawyer and David. If you'd like to be part of our show, 844-STUDIO-4. We are still streaming live on the WSIC News website, YouTube, Facebook, X, and LinkedIn.
Yeah.
So obviously this is March Madness. How's your bracket? Did you fill out a bracket?
I did not fill out a bracket.
Okay. I'm sure if you had, it would be completely intact right now.
Yeah.
Given your deep-seated knowledge of college basketball.
Actually, I think I would have more of a chance than people who actually get into way too deep into it.
You know, to be fair, that has been my experience. The people that know the least about it are the ones that generally do the best.
Yeah, that's right. That would be me.
There's probably a message there for me, but I still do it.
Well, our state fans are anxiously awaiting today's games.
Big game today for NC State.
Two games, actually. You know, their women are actually doing very well.
Yes, they are.
My understanding is that the NCAA planned that both of their basketball games nearly at the same time.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, that would speak to the efficiency of the NCAA.
Yeah,
they're batting 1,000 in that respect.
Well, speaking of winners and losers, there's a loser last night.
Yes, yes. Sad day for our Tar Heel fan brethren. Did not make it past Alabama. Yes. I know I'm heartbroken about it. Go Niners. It was a good game last night. But yeah, they did make an exit. So it's going to be interesting to see. So, I mean, but Clemson, on the other hand, eliminating number one seed, Arizona, advancing through, playing really good basketball right now. So ACC still representing overall.
So for all the trash talk about the different divisions, ACC absolutely seems to be the one that is coming out on top.
They're
in
doing
this
very well.
Basketball.
They're doing
tournament.
ACC went through a little bit of a basketball, you know, little bit of a basketball lull, if you will. You know, sure. Just basically Duke and Carolina carrying. I mean, they always have, but you know, with NC State, with Clemson, I mean, they're really starting to pick up. You know, really at the right time in March. So, but another sport you were telling me about. You've been, you know, obviously you might not follow NCAA basketball, uh-huh. but clearly you are a deep follower of NCAA tennis.
Yeah,
which I didn't realize.
No. No, you know, I do play tennis.
Yes,
I enjoy tennis. But this story that we're going to talk about kind of piqued my interest because there's a current Chapel Hill women's tennis player who plays obviously during college. So she's under NCAA rules, but she just sued the NCAA because she also will do tournaments outside of her collegiate play. And
which they are allowed to do.
They are, but they're not allowed to accept the money.
Yes.
That they win.
Yes.
Do you think that's fair?
No, I think it is grossly unfair.
Yeah.
I mean, what is the difference between me playing, me as a college student, having a job, uh-huh. you know, working at yeah. Walmart, Target, and getting paid for doing that, and a tennis player playing in a tournament and not be, why is that? There's really no difference. It's an outside job. It's off campus. She's using her talent in order to play in tournaments
right.
and she is compensated accordingly for how she does in that tournament.
Right.
So why is money what, you know, because basically if she accepts the money, she can, but then she loses her amateur status. She can no longer play in college. It's a similar situation. A month or so ago, a golfer from the University of Alabama uh-huh. Won a PGA professional event.
That's
and,
right.
And, you know, had to leave something like $600,000 on the table. I mean, it was a huge number of prize winnings he had to leave on the table because he could not collect it. Had he collected it, he would have lost his amateur status.
Yeah.
And so I think that's grossly unfair, but I've always yeah. found that, I mean, the NCAA really is, in my opinion, is about 5 years away from just being obsolete.
Really?
NIL, that first their rules and their arcane rules and their just inability to move or anything like that is mm-hmm. going to be the undoing of them. There's just too much money out there, but NIL really, I think, is going to be the straw that breaks
and
the
NIL
back.
Name, image, and likeness.
Yes, that's right. What basically the Supreme Court ruled that athletes can profit, and this dates all the way back to the early 90s mm-hmm. When there were college basketball games going, college basketball video games. Mm-hmm. And they would put the players in there,
yeah.
but the players were never compensated. And so actually a player by the name of Ed O'Bannon, who played for UCLA, was one of the first ones to bring a lawsuit about name, image, and likeness. So this goes back to the mid-90s
wow.
of this argument that's been happening. So obviously athletes can now be paid. These collectives, if you will, universities don't pay. These collectives are set up and the NIL money goes into that. And
yeah.
players are then allowed to, you know, do a commercial or uh-huh. a print ad, a digital ad or whatever for a company that puts the money into the NIL and then uh-huh. they're paid out of that.
So the collectives, that seems like a fancy word for me to say rich guy's playground. Because I have seen the level of love and money that certain people will put towards their favorite college sport.
Yes.
I could imagine that these would be like high wealth individuals who could probably put their hands on quite a bit of cash so that they could help and recruit the next player, right?
Well, and that's what you're seeing at a lot of the bigger schools. Like, for example, at Michigan, Tom mm-hmm. Brady is a big contributor into the NIL. And so the more money you have in an NIL is the more monies that you are able to pay a player. And
right.
the more money you are able to pay a player, the higher caliber of player will ultimately look at your school
yeah.
to go there for the compensation.
And there's no, like, I guess an NFL has salary caps. So there's no like salary caps
no.
or anything with NIL.
No.
It has to be
reasonable, right? You can't pay, if a player comes in and does like, you know, a digital ad, you can't pay uh-huh. $1 million to do that, right? But it's a sequence of things like, you know, there was an Alabama player when NIL first passed, I think he was a cornerback, became the first $1 million NIL athlete because he signed endorsement deals. Like you see players in commercials now. If you're watching uh-huh. the NCAA tournament, you'll see Caitlin Clark in commercials. Baycott from Carolina has been in a tax commercial for TurboTax.
Uh-huh.
And so they get paid accordingly off of that.
Off
so
of that.
The bigger okay. the bigger the endorsement or the bigger the thing, the higher the paycheck.
So what we're what we're seeing then is how do you not just centralize all of the power to a few or handful of schools when you're attacked? I mean, like, is that what's going to happen in 5 years from now?
Well,
like,
I mean, that is the theory is that, and who knows, but the bigger schools, the SEC schools, the, you know, some of the ACC schools, the Big Ten schools will ultimately form the theory is they'll form a 60 team super conference, that, and the NCAA will basically just be pushed to the side. They'll just leave the NCAA governance.
Well, we may have someone on the other line who wanted to put in their two cents about NIL or whatever.
Maybe they want to pay you for your name, image, and likeness. Hi, you're on with Senator Sawyer. Good morning.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, there we go. I didn't hear the beep.
Hey, good hearing your voice.
Hey, Vicky, this is Jesse. You doing okay?
Yes, sir. I'm glad you called in. Thanks for listening today.
I wasn't sure if you was taking calls or not, so I didn't know, but you know, I called in. I was just wondering if I see a lot of ads and stuff of foreign goods coming into this country that's really, really undermining American manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
To the point that it's like we can't make nothing. They compete with this communist style products coming into this country by the literally shiploads.
Mm-hmm.
And are we doing anything about that at all?
Well, thank you
I think it's like one of them is like a sworn enemy to the United States, and yet we allow them to come in and buy our land and just literally dump their products in here. And it's like, you know, how are we supposed to be able to make anything and compete with that?
You mean their products, like they're illegal aliens? Yeah. So thank you for that.
Know of any bills or anything that may be going on?
Yeah. So I know that's a federal level. Yeah. Thank you so much for the call, Jesse. Thanks for asking about that.
Thank you, Vicky.
Yes, sir.
Have a good Easter.
You too. Thank you. Yeah. No, I share his concern because there is a national pride that I want to have sovereignty and have our borders and things made in the USA. But international trade is important. Sometimes I've heard people say that if you trade, you're not going to go to war. So if you trade with people, you don't go to war. But there is, I know, with manufacturing, it's a global shift about where some of that stuff is going to, away from China. A lot of it doesn't have to do anything other than the fact that they don't want another COVID scare. Like, so if you do that, if you have a COVID scare in China and the whole thing is shut down, then the whole world shuts down because of the manufacturing stuff. So I know there's some realignment there. Shipping overall is actually down. You would think that it's up, but it's actually down. So international trade, that means it's down. So it seems like just the natural market forces that people are sourcing some of their stuff here locally. And then some of the, like, you know, manufacturing here that we're doing is from foreign companies owned, but they're actually employing like North Carolina and United States folks, like, for example, Toyota,
mm-hmm.
right? They're getting ready to open up their plant in Randolph County, which is near the Asheboro Zoo. And they have a huge battery manufacturer in, I think, Alabama or Arkansas, I can't remember. So there's a lot of people who may have an international footprint, but are doing stuff right here at home.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I know, and it's interesting because obviously as transportation chair in the Senate, I know you did a tour not that long. It was about a year ago that you did your tour and went down to the port.
Yeah, it's
and
been a couple years
and
ago.
Saw,
yeah.
A couple years ago and saw the port and everything
coming
out.
And I drove a crane.
And you drove a crane.
Nothing on it. Don't worry, nothing on that. But I did get to sit in the crane at Moorhead City and move the booms around. And wow. And hey, let me tell you, kids, if you are one of those folks who want to move to the beach and live at the beach, look at getting certified to drive a crane. They need people. It's a great paying job, and the views up there are beautiful.
Naturally.
Yeah. I mean, those are some really highly technical skilled jobs that anybody can get into and make a great living working at the port in either Wilmington or actually Savannah, but mm-hmm. Wilmington or Moorhead City here. Those are cool, fun jobs that you can work outside and look at the ocean all the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and to Jesse's point, you know, he asked if there are any bills addressing these things. Sadly, you as a state legislature are extraordinarily limited on what you all can do when it comes to border security, immigration, and things like that. I mean, all federal level at that. And it's safe to say nothing is happening at the moment to deal with that at all, especially during an election year.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
But, you know, hopefully, you know, we'll see how this election turns out. But maybe, you know, even though we have a Republican House, you know, you can't get anything through the Senate or
we can talk about that after the break. I had a meet and greet with Congressman Murphy yesterday, and we talked specifically about that. So maybe we can
absolutely
talk about that after the break.
You're listening to We're Just Saying on WSIC News. We'll be right back.
We'll return with more of NC Senator Vicki Sawyer and We're Just Saying after this short break on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. Now more We're Just Saying with North Carolina Senator Vicki Sawyer on 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
Welcome back to We're Just Saying on WSIC News with Senator Vicki Sawyer and David. If you'd like to be part of our show, 844-STUDIO-4. We are still streaming live on the WSIC News website, YouTube, Facebook, X, and LinkedIn. So before the break, we were talking about immigration and, you know, what, you know, how little ability the state really has to really influence any of those things. But you said that you'd had met with Congressman Murphy.
Congressman Dale Murphy. Congressman Greg Murphy. Now, he's from the eastern part of the state. So, and he's actually one of only three currently serving in Congress that is a licensed doctor. He's actually a surgeon. So he, I was excited to see him because he'd actually been on the Ben Shapiro podcast, which I listened to, and he is starting this law that will, or he has this law that is to remove federal funding from any medical college who places admission or standards around DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, or who has curriculum that specifically teaches DEI, because he has had personal experiences with colleges of higher education excluding qualified candidates based on their race or religion. And his argument is that when you look at the medical profession, they need everybody, and that that medical profession has already kind of assimilated to represent all types of minorities, not just folks who are white. There's a lot of folks who are of Indian descent that are now in the medical profession. There's a lot of folks who are of Chinese descent that are in the medical profession, along with Hispanic and Black. And he's, you know, he had the exact numbers, but it's like it already has happened that way, that there's been attracting people who are of different races and religions in organically. And this artificial construct of race that is being put on these medical schools and excluding people to participate in that has got to stop.
No, absolutely. And it's interesting because, you know, I know Florida has been going through something similar to this right now.
Yeah.
And what, and so actually I listened to Ben Shapiro's podcast periodically, and I think I was listening to the one where this came up, and it was, you know, in the subjects of doctors. And, I know there recently, there's been discussion about DEI with pilots and things like that.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where it's like, look, the, you know, I'm a firm believer in, you know, race doesn't matter, gender doesn't matter, what that. If you are qualified to do a job,
right,
if you are qualified to go to a school, then you should be able to do that. It should be based off your qualifications. But to me, it's like, you know, lowering standards or modifying standards for things critical. Like, you know, it's like people ask, like, look, if I walk into a room and I've got a surgeon that was trained at, you know, Harvard and everything like that, and I've got an option for a surgeon that learned how to do it at night school, right? I'm going with the person that was at Harvard,
right?
I don't care what they look like. I don't care what gender they are.
Right.
I want the most qualified person that there can possibly be who's going to have my life in their hands, right? And that goes for any type of job.
Right.
You want the most qualified person, right?
Yeah.
And so it's interesting to me that, you know, it, and we're seeing a real pushback on those things right now about you know, the lowering of standards and things like that when it comes to, you know, admissions and things, like, which I think is a good thing.
I agree. Yeah, I think it is good to be merit. And I am sensitive to the fact that not all people come from the same background as far as socioeconomic. But, you know, I think maybe there should be emphasis placed on helping people who start in a different place in life achieve more goals, but not, I don't think anymore it has to do with race. I think it actually has to do with money.
Yeah, economic status.
Honestly,
yes.
I think it really does have to do with economic status, and someone who came from a place that wasn't that great economically and fought and clawed my way up. I mean, this is why America's beautiful, because you can, there's not a caste system, so there's nothing there saying that you can't be the best that you can, regardless of your race. But yes, sometimes folks who start off in a, you know, low socioeconomic family, it's a little, you know, there's some advantage, disadvantages to them, but that's where the public education system and everyone should be able to come in and build those kids up so they can achieve. But it doesn't have to do anything with race.
No.
I think you're also going to see that same thought come through the General Assembly. In fact, it's always fun when I learn about things from the news that I didn't know, but that was going to go through the General Assembly. But it seems like a trustee at UNC Chapel Hill mentioned during their last meeting that expect to see a similar thing as Florida is about with the diversity, equity, and inclusion coming to a General Assembly in North Carolina near you.
Really?
So, yeah, it looks like they are going to eliminate that kind of, you know, training at our, and, you know, admission standards, obviously, because that was a Supreme Court case. But yeah, so it seems like there is, Florida's taking the lead. That's why, you know, DeSantis is such a strong candidate but is a great governor because he seems like he's just ahead of the curve on all that stuff.
Absolutely. And it was interesting. So when you sent out, you sent out show prep.
I did.
It was fantastic. It came last night, as a matter of fact, as opposed to like 9 o'clock in the morning when I normally get it. But it was. But I there was something on there. Where I'm going to be fair with you. Did not think I'd see you had squatters' rights.
I did.
What in the world? What got you onto squatters' rights?
Ron DeSantis.
Okay.
Yeah, Ron DeSantis, and that was someone actually a very lovely lady that I saw last night at the Republican Women's Club asked me. She goes, "We got to worry about squatters' rights here in North Carolina," and I was like, that's a good question. Does it? Can it? How does it work? So I kind of started doing a little research in my non-lawyerly manner that I did. And it looks like in North Carolina, we've got a lot better protections than most. So in a squatter, remember, is like someone who just comes over and takes over a home and or a dwelling without the permission of the owner. And in certain states, I guess that you have to go through the eviction process to get them out. You don't necessarily just be able to say, hey, get off my property, you're trespassing. And that's what was happening in Florida. And so Florida just passed a law to seamlessly streamline the process to remove squatters from your property. But in North Carolina, I didn't know this, you really can't claim the squatter's rights unless you've been there for like 20 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I think that's a pretty solid time frame.
Yeah. So the squatter must have possession of the property for a certain amount of time in order for them to gain rights. In North Carolina, a squatter must occupy your property for a continuous period of 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, and that's interesting because when I was back in my former life, when I was in banking, when the financial crisis hit and, you know, homes were being foreclosed on left and right, being abandoned and things like that.
Yeah.
I was working in the area that was working to try to, you know, make sense of all that. And one of the big challenges that we were having in a number of states that had very, very lax squatters laws was people were showing up, going into the foreclosed houses. And there were so many.
Sure.
Banks could not keep up with what was going on with the homes because it was like you couldn't even get them processed through foreclosures. They were just sitting there for months and months. And so you would come and so they would go and they would finally get them through and they would sell them either to another financial institution or investor or something like that.
Yeah.
And that investor would go and find someone living in that house who had squatted in that house, and then they would have to go through an entire eviction process to get them out of it. Mm-hmm. And it was very costly, very time consuming, and very difficult in some states to be able to get them out of the house.
Gosh, yeah.
And so, you know, so it gives me comfort to know that, you know, that North Carolina, at least, you know, that 20 year, that's a pretty handy, I think, time frame, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you've been there 20 years and all of a sudden somebody realizes you're there, okay, property owner, you dropped the ball.
Right.
Okay, I'll be fair. Yeah. You dropped the ball on that one. You obviously didn't check the place for 20 years. So you dropped the ball on that one. That's on you. Uh-huh. All right. 20 years, that's a reasonable time frame.
So, and if they're there for 20 years, it can't be just like I can imagine this happens a lot in mountains where people just, you see, go quote, live off the grid. Maybe they didn't purchase the property. Maybe they're just squatting on somebody else's. So I could imagine maybe not in Mooresville, but definitely like in the mountain areas where you have folks who want to just say goodbye to it all and live off the grid and be in my TikTok, but all of a sudden you're on my TikTok. So I don't understand how that works.
Yeah, it's not really off grid if you're on TikTok.
No, I know. I know. I've actually watched this one where a guy was bragging. He was in North Carolina and his total monthly bill is like, or expenses are, is like less than $100, and $60 of that a month is his dog food.
Really?
And yeah. So he's got, you know, dogs and stuff. And then I think like $20 or $30 of it is his smartphone. So I'm so, like, So that's his priorities: dogs, then phone, and then I guess somehow getting to the internet so that you can you can upload your TikToks to tell us how living off grid is so cool.
Yeah, no to people who want to live off grid. The moment you got that smartphone, you were no longer off the grid.
Off the grid.
Yeah, the no longer off the grid. That's just not the way that works. That's amazing. Oh, yeah, my gosh.
I know.
Bless hearts.
But so if you're a squatter and you're that guy, then you have to, so if you've been there, then there's also other things that you have to do in North Carolina. Like one is you have to have some kind of beautification steps that we're physically living on the property. So you can't.
You had to plant some flowers.
Yep. Yeah, so which it indicates a sense of ownership. So that's kind of where that is. So if you're in North Carolina and you're worried about it, I don't think you're going to have to worry about it too much and what we saw in Florida. But so there it again, Florida leading the pack on absolutely good conservative values. Absolutely. So,
well, it is Easter weekend. Any plans?
You know what? No, not right now. Just other than church, you know, you got to go see Jesus.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, 2,000 years ago, 22, they did the third day.
Absolutely.
Right? So we're going to go to see Jesus on Sunday. And about yourself?
No big plans. Got going to the in-laws for lunch tomorrow.
Good.
Get to go see my niece and my nephew and the in-laws. And then I've got my family side on Sunday. Yes, there will be basketball tossed in throughout the course of the course of those events. But then Sunday I've got Easter dinner with my family. So
good.
A lot of family time.
Well, good. Well, I'm glad that the March Madness is coalescing around Easter so that we will all have something to talk about at the dinner table.
Absolutely. And it's funny because, like, you know, my yesterday my bracket's pretty much kaputs, so now I just have to watch for the fun of it and to see if I can cheer on some more upsets, because
okay.
I like seeing upsets at this point. So I never shed a tear when like a high seed goes down or anything like that, only because, well, unless I put money on them in a hypothetical scenario, because I would never do that. I do enjoy being able to sit down, watch the games, and I love this time of year because you never know who's gonna win, which obviously, because we saw last night if you were watching the game. So it's a really cool time of year. I love this time of year.
Well, good. Well, I'm glad. Well, everybody have a wonderful Easter, and we will see you next week.
Absolutely. Everybody, thank you for listening to We're Just Saying on WSIC News Radio. Have a great Easter. Thank you.
Serving you better than ever before. 105.9 100.7 WSIC, Statesville, Mooresville, North Charlotte.